This morning's Bible reading will be from Genesis, the fifth chapter, verses 21 through 24. And Enoch lived 5 years, 60 and 5 years, and begat Methuselah. And Enoch walked with God after he begat Methuselah 300 years, and begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Enoch were 360 and 5 years. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him.
Good morning. I want to thank Brother Jim for that reading. And from that reading, you could tell that we are progressing in our tour of the Hall of Faith. And we started last time I was up here, which I think was two or three weeks ago, talking about Abel and what we could learn from his brief but very faithful life that we learn about in the book of Genesis. And now we're going to cover the next two that we find in our exploration of the hall, which are Enoch, which Jim just read about, and then we'll touch on Noah in just a few moments. I want to then read Hebrews chapter 11, verses 5 and 6. The Hebrew writer tells us, "By faith Enoch was taken up so that he should not see death, and he was not found, because God had taken him. Now, before he was taken, he was commended as having pleased God. And without faith, it is impossible to please him, for whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him." So, but the strange occurrences around Enoch's departure from this earth, you'd think there'd be a whole lot to read about that, but really what Jim read and what Hebrews tells us, for the most part, is all we know about Enoch. And really, his entry in the book of Genesis is really just part of the genealogical record. There's not really a narrative or any kind of an account of his life that we're given. And so from what we learn in Hebrews and what we learned in Genesis, that he was 65 years old when he fathered Methuselah, that he lived then he lived like another 300 years, and so all of his days on the earth were 365 years, and it just says and he was not. At least that's how it is in the English Standard Version. It's pretty similar in other accounts. So other than a quote that is attributed to Enoch that we find in the book of Jude, in which Jude then refers to him as a prophet, which, being inspired from through the Holy Spirit, we have to assume and we truly believe that Jude is not making that up. So he obviously lived his time on the earth as a faithful person to follower of God, and that he was considered to be a prophet. But other than that quote in Jude, Hebrews, and in Genesis, that's really all we know about him. But there's still enough there that we can get an idea about him. But I think we have to begin with the elephant in the corner of the room. Why did Enoch not die? What were the circumstances or the things leading up to that, or why did it happen? So I feel if we look in the next chapter, we may get some kind of an idea, because just a few generations after Enoch lived, we're told this in Genesis chapter 6, verse 5. "The Lord saw that wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." Now, we tend to think that our society is bad, and I'm not downplaying that. There's so much sin in our modern-day world, but Enoch's time didn't seem to be any better, possibly even worse. And so, rather than having to continue in a life in those surroundings, that maybe that's why God took him, that he was such a loyal prophet that he wanted to reward him for that service and not make him live in those surroundings. We're really not sure, because the scriptures just basically say you know, tell us that God took him. Between Hebrews and Genesis, we get that. And if God took him, maybe we can understand why. And we are told that Enoch walked with God. Now, there are two people who we know didn't see death. Obviously, Enoch and then Elijah. But only one of those two does God describe as having walked with him. And it was Enoch. The Genesis accounts that I read people that said that he just suddenly disappeared. That he was there and suddenly he wasn't. And while we're told he was not, we really don't know anything about his disappearance. We don't know if it was like Elijah, he asked for it, or, you know, that it was something that was, not say a grandiose exhibition, but we really don't know. It just says he was no longer there. We still can learn a really good lesson from Enoch, and that is the ability to trust in God when we know others around us are not. Enoch, like I said, we lived in a time, I doubt things went that poorly in just a few generations. I'm sure at the time of Enoch's life, there was the sin in the world that we find in Genesis 6. And so we know that regardless of what was going on around him, Enoch stayed faithful to God. And this is something that Jesus warned us about, that we would be struggling, surrounded with those who are not faithful in the way that we strive to be. Matthew 7, verse 13 and 14, "Enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide, and the way is easy that leads to destruction. And those who enter by it are many, for the gate is narrow, and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few." This clearly tells us that we're going to be outnumbered by those who do not share the same faith and the same living the same life that we are striving to live. And so, just like Enoch most likely did, we have that daily struggle to trust that God is leading us in the right way and have our faith in God when others around us are not. So, just like Enoch lives in a world where people were falling further and further away from God, he stayed true to him. We also need to have that attitude that regardless of what goes on around us, we can continue to strive to walk with God. Now, that does take courage. It's hard to be faithful, to be that light that we need to be when it's not an environment conducive to that being the norm. I mean, we are going to have those people who will push back against us. And so how Enoch did it, we can learn from it too. And it's because he did walk with God. He had an extraordinary relationship that's really not said about many having that relationship. And so when you think about that in walking with God, what comes to your mind about what that might be? And I think having a close relationship with God, I think it would involve having communication with God. It would, you know, speaking with him, talking with him, just having those moments where you can go to him in a quick prayer or just in a quick conversation. I think we also can think about spending time with God, and that involves for us spending time in his word and learning more about him and fostering that relationship. And it just is a close relationship that Enoch had, and it's certainly something that we're not going to have someone write a two verses in a book about our life, but it's still something we need to strive for, that we need to have that close relationship and have that really good fellowship with God. On an earthly level or at a human level, we can't have a good relationship with someone if we don't try to. Relationships just don't pop up. And so the lesson we can learn is that we need to spend time with God and work to understand what he wants out of our lives. And Enoch found that special relationship, and we can have a similar relationship. You know, most people in the world that don't draw near to him is because they find something else to draw near to, whether it's a hobby or a sport or something. people are looking for things to put their time into, and that's what draws them away from God. They're choosing to have a relationship with something, the physical or the earthly level, and they aren't looking to draw near to God. So then we come to another statement that is found about Enoch. Without faith, we can't walk with God. That's what we're told, that there's simply no way to have a relationship with God if we don't trust our lives and trust our faith and have faith in Him. The writer of Hebrews did not say without faith it is difficult to please God. It's not difficult. It's impossible to please God without faith. And so then we're told that we need to believe that He is, or that He exists. And I don't think this is just a mere acknowledgement that there is a God. I think by having that, you are saying that you have a deeper understanding, that you realize that He has impact on our life. James, in his epistle, tells us that the demons believe that God exists, that He's there. So that isn't going to be enough to get you through. You need to be able to understand that God has a place in our lives. He has dominion over our lives, and that we need to be doing things that will be pleasing to Him. And so believing that God is helps us to reach further into our lives to have that relationship. Believing that God is what caused Abel to worship the Lord properly, and believing that God is, we're told here, is what allowed Enoch to live a life that was walking with God. Now if we look at the rest of verse 6, it says, "For whoever would draw near to God must believe that He exists, and that He rewards those who seek Him." So from this passage we see that God rewards those that do the things that Enoch did, for those people that draw near to Him, that believe in Him, those people will be rewarded. We can be like Enoch, who will be that example, will stand out among those that are doing wrong all about us. And if we do know, and if we do that, we will know that we will have a reward waiting for us. Scriptures, there were several passages I could have chose, but Colossians 3, verse 23 and 24 says, "Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ." We're called to believe in the promises that we are told, and we must believe that God is going to fulfill these promises and give us the rewards that we are offered. We have a hope for these rewards, and faith is what's going to get us there. The faith that Enoch had is going to get us to the point where we can receive what we are promised here. Now, a couple generations later, after Enoch, we now come upon the story of Noah. Now, there's an awful lot about Noah that we have, in contrast to Enoch, where it's very, very little that we know about Enoch. There obviously is a lot of material that we know about Noah. But let's see what Hebrews chapter 11, verse 7 focuses on in its mention of Noah. So in verse 7 it says, "By faith Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear constructed an ark for the saving of his household. By this he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness that comes by faith." The key here was that Noah was going to be, well, was warned about things that he could not have foreseen on his own. Things that were unknown, that would really be unimaginable from anything he had seen up until that point. The author of the book of Hebrews tells us that when we began this, my first lesson tells us that faith, one of the definitions of faith is believing in something unseen. Well, that's what Noah was being asked to do when God went to him. Noah was not able to comprehend this, but he had the faith in what the Lord was telling him. Noah would have to build this giant boat in order to save him and his family. And you know, let's just recall, it wasn't just his family he was trying to save. He preached the whole time that the ark was going on. People had that opportunity to listen to him, and they didn't exhibit the same level of faith in what God was telling him that Noah, and obviously the seven other members of his family that were told about, they had that same faith as well. And so he would have to not only save his family, but we're told about the animals he took, seven of every clean kind of animal, and then two of every unclean kind of animal. And so Noah had to believe that the world would be destroyed by a flood. In the same way, we have to believe that this world at the end will be destroyed by fire. That's not an easy thing for us to tell our neighbors, to have them believe, unless they have faith that what we are given in the scriptures is true. So we have that same struggle when we're trying to convince people that this world will not always be here, that there will be an end someday, and that they need to be ready for it. Now, on a simpler level, Noah had to believe it would rain. The scriptures indicate that it might not have ever rained before. It talked about the mist from the ground that watered the flowers and so forth. So we don't necessarily know about the level of rain that Noah may have ever seen, if he'd ever seen it at all. But with that in mind, he had to have faith that rain would come. And then he had to have faith that the end of the world that he was used to would be coming to an end. This flood would basically reset the earth, that it would allow all things on the earth to perish, and basically everything that he knew at that point in his life was going to change. And so he had the trust and the faith in God to allow him to carry out all of God's commands. And it says, Hebrews tells us that Noah had reverent fear. This was fear. This is what caused Noah to act. He had the respect for God, and he listened to him, and that's what compelled him to build the ark. And as we know, it wasn't really a small boat. I mean, I couldn't build something that would be small enough to go in my pool, let alone the size of what Noah was being asked to do. 450 feet long, approximately 75 feet wide and 45 feet high. This was not something that was going to be a small undertaking. And Genesis chapter 6, verse 22 tells us that Noah did this. He did all that God commanded him. And so, just like with Enoch, we're told that there's a promise for us for rewards. From the Genesis account of Noah, we find there is another promise that we still can adhere to today. In Genesis 8, verses 20 and 22 through 22, it says, this is after the ark had come to rest on the face of the earth as the flood waters subsided. Beginning in verse 20 of Genesis 8, then Noah built an altar to the Lord and took some of every clean animal and some of every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And when the Lord smelled the pleasing aroma, the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground because of man, for the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I ever again strike down every living creature as I have done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. So we have that promise that the seasons, the cold that we face and the heat that we're going to have this week versus the cold that we've had over the last few days, that's going to continue. All these things are going to not stop happening. And then if we go over the next chapter, Genesis 9, verses 12 through 17, there's another promise that comes out of the account of Noah. Beginning in verse 12, and God said, this is the sign of the covenant that I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all future generations. This is going to apply to us today. I have set my bow or bow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. When I bring clouds over the earth and the bow is seen in the clouds, I will remember my covenant that is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And the waters shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the clouds, I will see it, and remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth. God said to Noah, this is a sign of the covenant that I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth. Now, when we see a rainbow, most people just see the colors and the very interesting scientific effect that comes from light passing through droplets of water, the prism that is a result of that. But it's a promise that I think we don't necessarily, well, I don't always think about it when I see a rainbow, but we're told this is something that the Lord is going to remember the covenant that is between us and him. Every time a rainbow comes about, this is what he's doing. And so this promise was made to all future generations and all living creatures that as long as the earth remains, God is not going to destroy the earth by water again. That's what we need to remember when we see a rainbow, that's God telling us that the rain's going to pass. It's not going. We've had a lot of rain this week, but we knew it would stop. We knew it wasn't going to continue on, and that wouldn't be a cause of our destruction. And we're also told that summer and winter and day and night are going to continue all through this. But there is an implication that we can take from this, is that the earth isn't going to be here forever, though. It says, while the earth remains, at least that's what it says in the English Standard. I know it says it differently in some other translations, but this indicates that there's going to be a time when the earth isn't going to be here. And I mentioned earlier about we have to have faith that this earth will burn, by, you know, be burned and destroyed by fire. And for the sake of time, I'm not going to read that passage, but that's found in 2 Peter chapter 3. And it tells us that we're not going to be destroyed by water, but this earth will be consumed by fire. And when that happens, we will all stand before God for the final judgment. So the sign of the covenant reminds us of this promise is a rainbow. And he says that this is going to be our reminder that while, yes, he won't be destroying the world by water, there will be a destruction of fire that will be coming up. So in wrapping up today, we have several lessons that we've learned from Enoch and from Noah. At least I hope I've expressed that to you. And from these two men, we can learn that we are expected to walk with God. This wasn't just something that Enoch was uniquely allowed to do. We all can walk with God, and that's built up by having a relationship and having trust in him. So another thing we learn in that, remember, it's just not difficult to please God without faith. From what we read, it's impossible to please God without faith. So faith has to be part of what that relationship with God has. We have to believe that God exists and that he has an impact on our lives, and we have to realize that God is going to reward us for that faith. It's not going to be for nothing, that we will have that reward for us. And we're told that it's not a bad thing that we're told that, because that could be a great motivator for us to remain faithful. And then we have to have trust in God like Noah did, and we have to have the fear that we're told that Noah had that allowed him to fulfill the commandments that God gave him. And so we can apply that to our lives. We're given commands just as Noah was. Now, we're not told to go build something physical. We're told to, you know, to have faith and to live our lives trying to please him. And so we could take from Noah that when God gives us commands, no matter what they may be, that we have to obey them. Even if, like Noah, he might not have fully understood what was going to happen, but he had faith in God. And so if we may have questions about why we're told certain things to do, we have to have the same faith that God is looking out for us and that he has the best interest in us. So Enoch and Noah, two great patriarchs, that one we know a lot about and one not so much, but we have great lessons and great great valuable lessons that we can learn from them. Brother Pugh has the prayer for us, and after that we will continue with our class.